It's Essential Pittsburgh, and I'm Andy Conti, investigative reporter for the Tribune Review, sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer. As someone who has been writing about cybersecurity for some time now, I'm really very personally excited about this next guest. The National Cyber Forensics and Training Alliance has emerged as one of the biggest weapons against computer crime, and yet it remains almost unknown, even right here in Pittsburgh, where it has been based for nearly 20 years. Maria Vello, a top cybersecurity mind, has run the nonprofit as its president and CEO. She recently announced plans to step back a little, becoming president emeritus and allowing someone else to take over. She has presided over the alliance, however, for 3 years at a time when computer breaches have been top of the news almost every single day. Maria Vello, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Andy.
So, Maria, can you start out by telling us a little bit about the NCFTA? What is it exactly that you do there?
So it's not really what I do. It's what everyone else does there. I'm probably the least important person at the NCFTA. It's the staff. It's private industry. It's law enforcement. You know, it's everybody else. But we are a nonprofit. We're a 501c3. You know, we work with private industry. We work with academia. We work with law enforcement, as well as the NCFTA, so domestically and internationally. And it's cross-sector industry, all working together to identify the cyber threats, mitigate the cyber threats, and then to neutralize them through our law enforcement partners. We're absolutely there for the greater good. So although probably most of Pittsburgh has never heard about the National Cyber Forensics and Training Alliance, we've been in existence since 1997. The entity was first conceived through the Pittsburgh High Tech Task Force. So at the time, Dan Larkin was the unit chief. It was his idea, you know, along with some other people.
It was
and
a totally different environment then. I mean, were people even talking about computer security in that time?
Not as much. Certainly not the way that they're talking about it today. It has absolutely evolved. It has absolutely become far more sophisticated than ever. And I know, you know, 15 years ago, we used to say, hey, these cyber criminals are sophisticated. It's beyond your imagination what they can do, how they can move laterally, how they can get in. And it's really, it's not even at the perimeter. It's leveraging social engineering. It's leveraging extremely sophisticated phishing, spear phishing attempts to get in.
From day one, when I first started covering this topic, it was people like you talking to me that really got my attention. You know, the public doesn't really have a good sense always of what the threats are out there. But whenever I started talking to people like yourself who do see what the threats are, you see what's going on every day, that person started to freak me out a little bit. So what freaks you out about cybersecurity? Is there anything that really, you know, keeps you up at night or gets you thinking, hey, this is much worse than the public has any idea?
Well, I think it's alarming, actually. I mean, when you look at the magnitude of the problem, it's not just financial problems. It's really the gap has widened between us and these nefarious threat actors. So if I look at everything that's going on, not only from a financial perspective, but also from a, you know, intellectual property rights, trade secrets, you know, mergers and acquisitions, it is absolutely a threat to the very economic infrastructure of this country and every other country around the globe. If economic infrastructures in other cities around the globe are growing because of criminal activities, just imagine, you know, the adverse effect to us and other countries around the world.
And so we're all sort of victims without even necessarily knowing it then.
I think at times there's a lot of companies out there that probably have been compromised and don't even know that they've been compromised. I think everybody is absolutely trying to do more to try to raise awareness, situational awareness, educate the end users, the consumers, their employees. But it's a constant battle. You have to really be vigilant. You have to do a tremendous amount of due diligence. You've heard this, you know, time and time again. They only have to get it right once. We have to be on the defensive constantly.
And so you have kind of a unique model at NCFTA. You're in the Second Avenue Technology Corridor. And from what I understand, you bring together, you have government researchers, investigators in there, but you also have corporate representatives. You have people from retail, banking, industry, manufacturing. They're all there under one roof with the idea that they can share information about threats and react in Congress, right?
That's exactly what we do. But the key is we're sharing information. We share responsibly. We're not sharing any personal identifiable information. We're trying to look at what's the emerging threat. How do we make people aware of the emerging threat? How do we make sure that we push that information out to all of our industry partners or even working with law enforcement to put out public service announcements so people understand the threat, understand what's coming, so that they can put up their defenses before it happens. And by working globally, there's a lot of times that, you know, you might have a piece of malware or botnet that starts in another country. if we can get that information, leverage it, push it out to private industry, then they can put up their defenses before it ever even hits the United States.
Like you said, you've been doing this since 1997, almost 20 years now. We've been hearing the last year and a half about the Obama administration wanting to do more of this, bringing government and private sector together. You really created the model for it. What is the powerful leverage that you get from having government and private companies under one roof?
I don't think anybody can do it alone. Private industry has the best information. They see who's knocking on the door, what's traversing their network, how are they figuring out what the thresholds are for different activities. The government doesn't have that type of information. But if private industry is willing to share that information and share it collectively, we can sanitize it, anonymize it, add to it via open source tools and via the internet. And we can put together an intelligence report, take the information, turn it into actionable intelligence that private industry as well as law enforcement can leverage to mitigate the threats and to neutralize the crimes.
We just talked a little bit earlier with a couple of FBI investigators, and they were talking about the case they brought against the Chinese military leaders who are accused of having stolen from some big Pittsburgh companies, U.S. Steel, Alcoa, Westinghouse. Can you talk a little bit about the impact of those kinds of threats on Pittsburgh companies and how prevalent are the attacks from nation states?
I think if you look at the various countries, some of the Eastern Bloc countries, if you look at China, some of the reasons they attack people are a little bit different. The Chinese absolutely have a different reason for attacking companies than some of the countries in the other parts of the globe.
The reasons we hear, the Chinese, it's more targeting companies here rather than individuals, right?
And absolutely. Yeah, it's a different mentality, right? I mean, for China, they think that they're entitled to that information. Their culture is such that if you have information and you have technology, then they ought to have access to it too. Part of the problem is they don't understand the processes and procedures. So if you look at what's happening next, they want to learn the processes and procedures. They're going to take that information. But when they take the information and they hack into corporations to, find out what's happening from a mergers and acquisition perspective, new technology, new research and development, they are using that information. We pay trillions of dollars a year to produce products, like jet fighters. But if that product is replicated in another part of the globe and there was no cost for research and development and they fly before we even do, that's a real problem.
You're listening to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Andy Conti of the Tribune Review, sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with Maria Vello, President and CEO of the National Cyber Forensics and Training Alliance. Actually, now the president emeritus as of 2 weeks ago. Maria, talking about these corporations and trying to get them on board, how hard is it to get them to work with you? Certainly, they don't want to talk to the media whenever there's a breach or even before a breach to say what they've done. What do you see on your side? How do you convince them to come to the table and sit with you at NCFTA and be part of the solution?
Because we don't market ourselves and we don't advertise and we don't want to be in the media and the press, it's a double-edged sword. But once we get the executives and get the people that are actually in the trenches doing the work to the table and talk to them about our capabilities, talk to them about the information that we are sharing, talk about sharing responsibly and the impact that it can have to their brand and their reputation and the very economic impact of their companies, then they begin to really look at the value of the NCFTA and what we have to offer. There's a huge appetite out there to share more information. I think what we have to be careful of is what information are you sharing? Everyone talks about information sharing, but you have to have the right data points to share in order for people to actually be able to protect their infrastructure or to defend from somebody that's trying to exploit your network. So we do things that other organizations don't do. Our model is being leveraged and being replicated around the globe right now. But when companies come and they talk to us and they see the value and they understand what we're doing and how we're doing it, they want to come and they want to participate. You also have to have companies that are like-minded, people that are like-minded, that want to do the right thing for the greater good. And we tell people, leave your ego at the door. We're working with some of the top financial institutions, retailers, automotive companies, and a number of other pharmaceutical companies. Come, focus on what you can share, and let's work together as a team. The enemy's on the outside. It's not on the inside of the NCFTA. And that's what people understand. So it's that like-minded willingness, to work together for the greater good that has made us so successful. But when I say us, I absolutely want to stress that it is a shared success. We could not do what we do without having law enforcement, academia, private industry, ourselves, and very, very strong prosecution. One of the reasons that Pittsburgh has gotten such a great name from a cyber perspective are because of people like Mr. Hickton, who, you know,
U.S. attorney.
Yes, right. The U.S. attorney for Western Pennsylvania. He has taken cyber personally as a threat to Pittsburgh, and he has taken it on head on. So with people like him, strong prosecution, with people like the FBI here in Pittsburgh, there's an appetite, and they're all working together because they know that if we don't, we're not going to win this war. And it is a war on cybercrime.
Can you talk a little bit about the threats you're seeing now? So we heard so much before about retail hacking. That was going on almost weekly. We were hearing about companies coming forward in the United States saying, hey, we lost your credit card information. That has died down. Does that mean that threat has gone away? And if it's gone away, what are you seeing now?
I really don't think that that threat has gone away. I think the biggest thing that concerns me are the things that are not being reported, are the companies that don't know that they have been hacked. I mean, everyone has heard of all the breaches in retail. Everyone has heard about all the breaches in healthcare. No company is immune and no one is safe. But to me, it's the companies that have been compromised but don't even have the expertise or the wherewithal or the knowledge that they have been hacked.
Do you see that when they come into your office? I guess how often does it happen that you're working with the company and they realize, oh, there's already somebody inside our system?
I don't think that happens a lot. I think most of the companies that come and that we're already working with have already been talking, working with us, working with other companies, sharing best practices, sharing ways to actually identify the threat very, very quickly and isolate it.
How are they vulnerable? What kinds of threats should they be looking for?
I think if you look at some of the threats today, I mean, most of the people still aren't patching. They're still not patching their systems. So a lot of the vulnerabilities that have been out there, people are still exploiting those vulnerabilities. I think if you look at it from a social engineering perspective, look at business email compromise. That's probably one of the biggest things that are happening today. And that's really social engineering. They're convincing people that they are somebody, an executive of the company, and that they should go ahead and send money out the door because they've either compromised somebody's email account or they've convinced somebody that, you know, that they should be sending this money.
Chris Geary, when he was here, talked a little bit about hackers trying to steal information around the edges in order to compromise the victim in some way or find out enough information they could come back and do a bigger hit. What kinds of information do you see hackers targeting when they get into companies?
I think it's a combination of things. I mean, first of all, what you'll see is they're really doing a tremendous amount of research before they even attack a company. So when they're looking at these business email compromises and social engineering people, they've already done a tremendous amount of recon to figure out who the executives are. Are they there? Are they on vacation? Are they traveling? So they're definitely very, very innovative. They're very, very smart, and they're very, very organized at what they do.
That's much more detailed than I would have guessed. That's pretty interesting. And then what do they do with that information when they find out, oh, the executive's on vacation or?
So they might go ahead and send an email to the, you know, chief financial officer telling them, hey, there's a sense of urgency. Send this wire transfer to this company. Pay this invoice. Just closed a deal. Send this money. It varies. It depends on the situation. It depends on what's going on at that company. And they tailor their message based on the recon that they've done about that company.
And how often do companies fall victim to that?
All the time. And it's a global problem. Here we call it business in the United States. We call it business email compromise. Over in Europe, they're calling it CEO compromise.
You're listening to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Andy Conti of the Tribune Review, sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with Maria Vello, President Emeritus of the National Cyber Forensics and Training Alliance. Maria, as we talked about earlier, the organization that you're with, the NCFTA, does maintain a very low profile. So can you take us in there a little bit, give us some sense of what it's like? You know, are you up working all night?
I think people would be amazed at some of the things that the NCFTA does. And we do it in the backgrounds. It's really not about credit. It's about doing the right thing. There's more than enough crime and there's more than enough credit to go around. The NCFTA doesn't want to take the credit. We're here for the greater good. We're here for all the right reasons. We have a staff of young, very energetic, very passionate intel research analysts. Their morale booster is actually when they find information and they build out an intelligence report that helps contribute to a case that one of these law enforcement agencies can take on. And if somebody gets arrested, that's really a big win for them.
And that's when the public sees what's going on if there's an indictment or arrest, but you still don't take any credit for it. Why do you maintain such a low profile?
honestly, we're not the most important part of it. It really is shared success. We are there because we would not be able to do what we do without law enforcement, without FBI, Secret Service, you know, CBPs, Customs and Border Protection, Homeland Security Investigations, Postal, all the organizations that are working together. When you take seemingly unrelated data and you put it together and get the last piece to the puzzle, that's a win for everybody. But it's private industry has the best information. We have to work with private industry. We have to work with people like-minded. Have to work with law enforcement, have to work with us, academia, and then certainly the strong prosecution.
It always concerns me when I talk with you and other investigators, people working in the cyber field, because, you know, a lot of my life is out there, like a lot of Americans. You know, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter. As a media person, a lot of my life has to be out there online. I shop online. I use my debit card, probably recklessly. Talk a little bit of what you suggest Americans do. How protective should they be about their information? Where's the dividing line about what's okay to do online?
You have to really be vigilant about your personal information and about security. We have to change our behavior. Until people change their behavior, we're always going to be at risk. I don't use my debit card anywhere. I use it in the bank if I'm going to use it. I don't use it at the gas pumps. I don't use it at every ATM machine that's sitting there out there in the corner. Everyone knows there's all ATM skimming going on. You already know that there's all these things. Why take the chance? I think we have to change behavior, and we have to be responsible. You know, somebody pays at the end of the day. I think for the end user, the consumer, you know, we just think, hey, if my account gets hacked, the bank's going to give me that money back. If my credit card gets compromised, hey, the retail company's going to give that money back. Well, you know what? Somebody's paying for that at the end of the day. Something has to give. And I think for us, it's changing our behavior. Being diligent. Don't go to sites. If you're looking for the best deal out there and you go to a website that you've never heard of before, and if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. People are always the weakest link. And most people think if I do it at my company, I'm safer because they have all these mechanisms in place to protect me. They do have more, but you know, not so much. You have to be careful.
Can you talk a little bit, spin this forward a little bit, now that you're president emeritus and, you know, you're starting to think about, you know, moving on personally, but do you have a sense of where we're going to be 20 years from now? How much more integrated will computers be in our lives? And do you anticipate getting a better handle on the cybersecurity issue in the coming years?
I think we will get we'll get fairly better at what we do, but they're always getting better at what they do. If you look at the Internet of Things, if you look at what you're able to do now with managing your home devices, your refrigerator, your TV, your cameras, your HVAC, as a consumer, how many of us really understand security and how to lock those down? People can leverage that for bad things. So I think if you look at the Internet of Things, where everything is going, all these devices, think about your kids. Your kids in college, they probably carry 3-4 devices. An iPod, an iPad, computer, a smartphone. That smartphone is like a walking wallet. It is your life. You leave it somewhere or you turn it in. Say you buy an iPad and you have all this information on there, all this personal information. You turn it in because you upgrade to the next best, greatest thing. You never even think about taking that information off of that device. So I think the Internet of Things is going to change everything. I think the Internet has changed everything, good and bad. It has made the world seamless. It's a global environment now. I think threat actors get better, will get better. I think it will always be cat and mouse. One of the biggest things that I'm concerned about is these devices, these chips, these computers that are made in another country. Who's to say that that chip isn't already compromised? Who's to say that that chip isn't already phoning home with all of your personal information? I think we have to find better ways to ensure, you know, there used to be, well, there still is, a company called, you know, Underwriter Laboratories. They would test products that were going to be attached to the power grid, to the electrical, to the carrier space, the networks. We need to do more cyber UL.
Lastly here, I wonder if you get frustrated with the civilians out here, the lay people, because you're in there, you're seeing it all the time, you're seeing the threats, you understand it so well. Do you get upset with the rest of us when you see how we behave with our debit cards and our online personas? And
no, I don't get frustrated with the average person. You don't know what you don't know. The people that live this, if you act the same way, then that's probably would be more frustrating. For me, it's really people worrying about their privacy and worrying about civil liberties when, you know what, half of our kids have already given away all their privacy. They've already posted things on Facebook, out on YouTube. You know, it's out there. You can't take it back. I'm probably more frustrated with the fact that maybe government agencies don't work more together. We all have to work together because there isn't really one company, one agency in one country that can fight this war alone. They share everything.
That's a great point because we tend to think of it here in the United States as an American problem, but it's called the World Wide Web for a reason.
Absolutely. So.
Maria, thank you sincerely for coming on today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Andy.
We've been talking with Maria Vello, President Emeritus of the National Cyber Forensics and Training Alliance. Coming up, we round out this hour of cybersecurity talk by catching up with one of the nation's top futurists. We'll be joined by Peter Singer, Senior Fellow at the New America Foundation, a Washington think tank. He's just come out with his first fiction novel, Ghost Fleet, about, yes, you guessed it, a future cyber war.
When you're a nonfiction writer, when you're a reporter, dialogue's easy. You get the quote right. With fiction, you're creating the quote.
I'm Andy Conti of the Tribune Review, sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer, and you're listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.